Parts of last year's tour was done at the new. You've got an incredible congregation here, and I mean, just your gift of hospitality just comes through so strongly. I mean, I think we had about 20 or 30 steaks on the fire last night, more meat than most of us see in a good year, and just all happening at Anton's house. So thanks for that. You know, with any CD project or album recording, normally the songwriter tries to convey a couple of messages, things he's been pondering, things he's been thinking about, that normally comes out in the form of a song. And that song that we sang a bit earlier, Couldn't Find My Heart, is one of those songs for me, because it just speaks of one of those core themes of this new album. So you'll see little hearts kind of everywhere at the back and on the posters there with Etienne's face on, and our CD cover, there's lots of hearts, and on our music video, hearts, hearts, hearts everywhere. So God's really saying something to us about hearts. You guys can just take a seat for a few minutes. And so I'm just very briefly, without spending too much time, and I'm just wanting to share around this issue of the heart of worship. If you can just put up that first slide, please. I'll read it for us in the meantime. It's from 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 32. It says, "Then David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail because of him.'" Speaking of Goliath, "Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And what we see here is we see a nation of failing hearts. You all know the story, probably my favorite story in the Bible. It's the big old fight between David and Goliath. And we learn the story in Sunday school, and we enact it, and we see stories about it, and write books about it. And what we have here is we've got Goliath, who's literally a freak of nature. This guy is 3 meters tall. He probably won't fit through the back when he walks there. And he's kind of a breed between humans and the kind of supernatural. So it's the line of the Anakin. These guys, you can go and dig up their graves. I mean, they lie. They're like, they're like 3 meters long. And he was carrying a spear that was probably about this thick and a javelin. And he really was scary. So for 40 days, he comes out morning and evening, and he's taunting the armies of Israel. And he's shouting to them, says, "Give me a man that we may fight. Give me a man that we may fight. If I prevail, Israel, you serve us, and vice versa." And the Bible says that there wasn't a single man in the Israeli army that was willing to fight him. In fact, it says they were dreaded. They were dreading this fight. They were fearful, and there wasn't one man, hardened man, that had fought many, many battles together and had many victories together for 40 days. There's not one man that is willing to stand up to this giant Goliath. And so we know the story. David's dad, Jesse, sends David, and he says, "My boy, my 3 eldest sons are at the front lines, at the battle lines. Fight for the Kospaki, Droboski, Kraiburgi, Bigikasis, and take it to them and just go give them some relief." And so David gets to the battlefields, and here it's going on. 40 days, this giant comes, stands there, shouts and roars at them and says, "Come on, guys, who wants to fight with me?" And everybody is scared. Everybody is afraid. And David gets to the scene and he's like, "What's going on here?" In fact, he says, "Who's this uncircumcised Philistine who defies the armies of the living God?" So immediately David he's not focused on the giant. He's focused on, yes, we've got a giant and he's 3 meters tall, and yes, he is scary. But here we've got the armies of the loving God, and he's already focusing on God. And my God is great, and my God is bigger. We are the armies of the living God. And so, of course, it's the first time in 40 days that anyone is saying, "Look, I'm willing to go and pick the fight." So David carries on. His brother says to David, "Keep your mouth shut. You don't know what you're talking about. Go and tend those few sheep that your father's given you to tend." And David says, "But is there not a cause?" And he turns to another and says, "But is there not a cause? 40 days, guys, nobody's willing to fight this giant." And of course, So the first time one Oki puts up his hand and says, I'll go and pick the fight. So what he does, here we go. Everybody, Saul, we've got a guy over here. He's willing to go and fight the giant. So Saul calls David. Says, David, I don't know if you've been smoking something or what. Have you seen this guy? He's pretty scary. And you're a buddy youth, but he's been a man of war since his youth. Goliath is a legend in the Philistine army. He's been killing men. You know, he's been having them for breakfast for most of his life. And David says this to him, your servant will go and fight me. But David says to him, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the Philistines. So David walks into a situation where the guys are cracking. Nobody can stand their man, and everybody's hearts are failing. And David doesn't focus on the natural. He says, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear. He's already telling his testimonies. Yes, 5 years ago I killed the lion. 2 years ago I killed the bear. The Lord, he delivered me. And we know the rest of the story. Stone in the head chopped off. The nation of Israel is never the same again. They get a king who goes into the golden years of Israel. 40 years David reigns over Israel. And it's regarded as the height of Israel's reign. And David's life has changed in that day. Even the ladies start singing, Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his 10,000. He becomes a legend overnight because of what happened there, because he didn't fold in a moment because of his faith in God. And I think the reason, I believe, that he didn't have a failing heart is because he had a heart of worship. I mean, the guy wrote the third of the Bible. We write a lot of songs based on the Psalms, but he wrote all those songs in the beginning. David had a heart of worship. He was so close and so intimate with God that, I mean, God was with him the whole time. So he just walks into situations where everybody is freaking out and hearts are failing, and says, I'm going to find him. And so this morning, I'm just very briefly wanting to share around this issue of the heart of worship. You know, a chapter earlier from this, Samuel goes, and he goes and anoints the new king of Israel. And he gets to Jesse and all his sons, and he lines them up in front of him. He says, Jesse, so show me your sons. And we see the tall and the dark and the handsome, and he goes through the line, and God's saying, no, it's not him. No, it's not him. No, it's not him. No, it's not him. Yes, I know this one has got big muscles, but no, it's not him. I know this one is a foot taller than everybody else, but no, it's not him. Eventually, Samuel's like, Jesse, do you have any more sons? Because God's saying no to everyone. And Jesse's like, well, I forgot you also scarf after the kiddo after we fell. You know, I packed only four scarf pistols, also the shorty, the ready. And they call David. And God says, this is the one. You know, you men, you look at the outward appearance, but me, God, I look at the heart. And from there, the Spirit of God comes on David, and I believe that's why he was anointed to go and fight those battles. But he had a different heart, and he had a heart of worship. And that's just what I very briefly wanted to share about this morning. You know, James and I got invited to minister at a conference earlier this year in March by Pastor Andre Krier. Who knows Andre Krier? Anton knows him well. Apparently Anton preached really well down there a couple of weeks back. I think he ministered with Christelle. And so Andre sends us this invite to this conference. I remember that the email comes through and the subject line on the email says, the Heart of Worship Conference. The Heart of Worship Conference. And I'm reading it, I'm like, surely Andre, you did not call your conference the Heart of Worship Conference. I mean, since Matt Redman wrote that song 15 years ago when we were worshipping on it in Valdenas, you know, we have sung it to death. We have read about it. We have spoken about it. We have had seminars about it. Surely everybody knows what the Heart of Worship Conference is. And I thought to myself, Andre, you know, you could have thought of a more original name. But little did I know, God was trying to work in my heart. And so Andre was completely right. I was completely wrong. And God wanted to say to me, Richard, you don't understand the heart of worship. You think you do, but you don't. And so I'm praying for the worship team, for vision for the year, and for what he wants me to share with the teams. And he gives me this picture in one of our intercession sessions. You can put up that next slide. And it's a picture of two hearts, very vivid. I remember it, praying, and I'm like closing my eyes, and all of a sudden I see these exposed human hearts. And it's a little bit gory, but it's very realistic, and it's like, there's this little heart on the left. It's kind of turned. It's not facing the same way as the big heart on the right. You've got this little heart on the left, and it's turned away from the big heart. And in this vision, I see how this little heart turns towards the big heart and then slowly moves towards the main heart. And as this little heart comes closer to the big heart, initially they're kind of beating out of sync like this. They've got different beats per minute. But this little heart comes up against the big heart and eventually they start beating together like this. I'm like, okay, Lord, I want me to understand the heart of worship. Show me. And so he says to me, Richard, understand the term, the heart of worship. And when we look at that term, the second part, worship, we're privileged here, we've got Bible school, you guys got Bible school, you've got foundations, and you've got lots of teachings and lots of people that know a lot about worship and what the difference between praise and worship is, and what the Greek words for worship is, what the Hebrew words is, and what's the difference between praise and worship. But what do we mean by the first part of that term, the heart of worship? So I googled it, the heart. Now we've got probably a couple of doctors and nurses and physiotherapists, yeah, and you know all about the heart, but I've forgotten about the function of the heart, so I just think that my body just works like it does, and yes, there is a heart, but I don't really know anything about the heart. So what is meant to be like a 5-minute session on the internet turns into this 2-hour detailed search, and I'm totally engrossed by the facts I'm reading about the heart, and I'm like, goodness, why didn't I pay more attention in biology, because this is such an amazing organ. And I mean, just look at the heart. The thing pumps about 2.5 billion times in the average lifetime. If it had to pump blood into these coal trucks that drive around here, it would fill up a couple of those coal trucks in the average lifetime. And every time it pumps, it's like giving a new tennis ball a hard squeeze. If you try to squeeze a hard tennis ball, I mean, it's quite hard to squeeze a tennis ball. 2.5 billion times this thing's going. Squeezing this blood to your tips of your fingers and your feet and so that you can function and move. An amazing organ. And I remember my wife was 8 weeks pregnant and we were really excited. We bought one of these day-by-day your pregnancy books. Each night we sit in the bed and we see how our little baby is growing and how he's developing, and initially he's really double. He or she is really tiny. And he looks like a little jelly bean like this. But he's got eyes. And he's got a little spine. And he's got the little thing that looks like a tail. And his tiny little hands that look like little dinosaurs front paws. And it's amazing how this baby develops in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, it just gets like, it's like 2 millimeters in the beginning, and then it gets like 5 millimeters, and then it gets like, and it just grows exponentially, and there's like little tail extends into your feet, and these little things become your hands, and massive head, and then, you know, it's just incredible. I tell you, yeah, amazing, God is incredible, just the way. I mean, if you, who's got children then? If you've been through the birth of a child, and you've followed how a child develops and grows, can you think there isn't a God? I mean, who in their right mind thinks that just happens? Anyway, so we're following our little babies developing. Now it's 8 weeks, we're going to the gynae for the first time, and we go there to the medic clinic, get into the gynae's room, and my wife's lying on his little table, and he whips out his McGaffer and he starts putting it on my wife's tummy, and he's like, here's your baba. And I'm looking at it, and I can't see anything. It's like a screen, and it looks like an X-ray, and it's just black and white and grey. And it looks like it's just this liquid thing. And he's like taking off meetings there, and he's using kopiki, and he said, I can't see anything. I'm like, Lord, do we really have a baby? Because the stocky had 2 stripes on, and you know, the blood test said we're pregnant, but really, I can't see. And I'm like, okay, doctor, I trust you. I guess there is a baby. And then he reaches up and he flicks a knob here and he turns it a little bit like that. And all of a sudden I hear doof, 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 that's my little guy's heartbeat. It's going at 157 beats per minute. I remember I still got tears in my eyes standing there in the dark and I'm thinking, there's life. So when I hear or I speak about the heart, that the heart represents me as life. And if life is in the blood and the heart is pumping the blood to the extremities of your body, I'd say we're talking about the critical organ in your body. So when we say the heart of worship, what we're really saying is the main thing, the core, the essence, the engine room of worship.
That's what we mean by the heart of worship. This is the main thing you need to understand about worship. And so I'm praying, Lord, show me. So what is the heart of worship? It takes me to that scripture, the next slide. In Deuteronomy, you can go one more. Deuteronomy 30 verse 10 says, if you obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes, which are written in the book of the law, and if you turn to the Lord your God with all your heart, everybody say, all your heart. And then he goes on to say, I'll bless the work of your hands, I'll bless your offspring from your body, I'll bless your cattle, you'll have many sheep, you'll have many oxen. People, there won't be enough space to contain the blessing. But there's this little thing here. You must turn, not just with your heart, but with
all
your heart. And see, many of us, and that's the first part of the vision God showed me, it's this little heart that needs to turn 180 degrees to the big God. And many of us will turn 90 degrees and we'll check God out from the side like that because we're not quite sure if we trust Him. Or if we've got four chambers in our heart, we'll say, God, you know, I'll give you three. I'll surrender three of the chambers of my heart. But this last little chamber, you know, God, you know, I studied for 4 years at Lumpo College and, you know, I know your Holy Spirit's actually prompting me, you know, how to do my Ooster Dio, we film with the Gmilis plant, we film with the Xonoprom plant. But you know, my common sense is actually saying, no, let's do this and let's do that. And God is saying, I'm wanting to help. I'm wanting to be everywhere. I'm wanting to be in your everyday decisions, everywhere. That's the heart of worship, is when you start pulling God into everything. And yes, we've got common sense. I'm not saying throw out common sense and throw out studies. God gives us a brain to develop and everything. But let's always be subject to turning our entire hearts in. And I was praying for you guys yesterday. I was saying, Lord, is there something you're wanting to say to them specifically this morning? And I just got this vision or this picture of a wedge coming into your heart. And God saying, I'm wanting to do a work of purification here in Standerton. And it's like this wedge is there that's coming. And then I see how this knot and heart goes around it like this, slowly, slowly, slowly to the top. And pulls that heart together like that. And you guys might know what that means. But God is calling us to turn to Him with our heart. So number one, the heart of worship is a heart that's turned to God in its entire. Number two, it's a heart that beats to the rhythm of God's heart. That's that next slide. And that's the second part of the vision. So I see the little heart turns to the big heart, and then it starts moving and initiates out of sync, and then gets onto the big heart, and they start beating together as one. And I remember many years ago, I was listening to this tape of this pastor preaching, and he asked the question, do you know what God's heart sounds like when it beats? Has anybody got an idea what God's heart would sound like when it beats? Some would say it's really loud. I mean, we read in Revelation that lightning and thunder emanates from the throne of God. And there's millions of angels singing. I shared about that last year. Heaven is a loud place, colorful place. What does God's heart sound like when it beats? So this pastor says, he thinks it sounds like this. People, 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 people. And that stuck with me for a long time. And you know, the thing is, a heart of worship is a heart that beats for justice, beats for righteousness, and beats for others. It beats for others. And our worship has to go beyond these four walls. It has to go beyond our churches. Did you guys hear about the Coast to Coast tour that they did at the end of last year? Yes, yeah, some of you followed it. Now, I remember Coast to Coast. So, we were quite brave as a band. We decided we're going to take that first CD that we launched earlier and we're going to go and tour it along the coast in prime time, 20 December to 31 December, along the coast, in the sun, with the women with their bullpens and their beard and stuff like that anymore to sing for my headache. And I remember thinking, God, we're crazy. We're taking our little worship songs that you've given us, and here we're going to play for the people that want doof doof music, and here we come with our worship captives. And I tell you, God just shattered my little boxes, and He just blew my expectations away. I mean, after the first night, people were getting baptized in the sea the next morning. Over 100 people got saved on Coast to Coast. And they were just responding. We were playing at Plet. It's New Year's Eve, people. There's like 5,000 people on the beach. And half of them are a bit drunkies and things. But I tell you, the other half is worshipping the Lord. And then you do an altar call and they stick up their hands and they come forward. And I was blown away. I mean, I thought they were going to love that. But okay, please, no. And God is saying, those songs that I give you are written in the quiet times of your songwriters. They come from heaven. They come straight from me. They are like arrows that you shoot into the hearts of unbelievers. And once they're in there, I can work. Never underestimate what God gives you. And so I just want to encourage you. The heart of worship goes beyond our churches. And God is even saying, Amos 5, take away from me the noise of your songs, for I will not hear the melody of your string instruments, but let justice run down like water, let righteousness run like a mighty stream. Our worship is not just our praise and worship. It goes beyond ourselves. It reaches out to others. Always remember that. So number one, heart of worship, heart turned to God in its entirety. Number two, it's a heart that beats for others. Number three, next slide. What's wrong with that heart? It's blue. And what color is the heart normally? Yes. And what color do you associate with romance? Most of you. Apparently there's some guys here got other colors in mind. Whatever does it for you, mate. So I'm reading this book of Matthew, and I get to this chapter that's about worship and romance, and I'm like, no, surely you must be wrong again. But romance and worship, and it's got this quote. It says, let's leave room for the unpredictable in our worship. Let's leave room for romance. I'm like, Lord, I don't understand this. You need to, with my open mind. And slowly start showing you, you know, in any covenant relationship, when romance goes out the door, like with your wife, then you're down the wrong road. And when it just starts, when you start going through the motions, and there's no more surprises, and there's no more things that make you think, they thought of me today, earlier, and you surprised me, or like, my girl, when you left this year, he was thinking about me. When those things disappear out of a covenant relationship, and then you just start going through the motions. And that's when it becomes a dead institution. And it's the same with our covenant relationship with the Father. There must be that unpredictability. And so he says, or so he gives us our entire bodies to worship him. He gives us our hands. So when we clap our hands together, we try to make that noise with any other two parts of your body, it just doesn't work. That's the way God made us. So when we praise something, which literally means to speak well up with exuberance or enthusiasm, so we can praise the Booker, well, we don't praise them for yesterday's performance, but when we praise some praise, that Hebrew word just literally means speak well of. And God is saying, I've given you your entire bodies with which to praise me. So he says, just clap your hands, all you peoples. Shout joyfully to the Lord. Shout to God with a voice of triumph. He's giving you your voice box. Thousands of years ago, men brought city walls down with a godly shout. How often do we do a shout in church? A godly shout, when it's in the spirit, I'm telling you, it moves spiritual atmospheres here around towns. A godly shout. Dance before the Lord with all your might. You guys are dancers here. A lot of other churches we go to, they never dance. Maybe when we do a CD launch, they'll get excited right at the end and then they might dance a bit. And here we see David dancing with all of his might, leaping, whirling, spinning, the king of the nation. You know, and God's saying, come on guys, some of you are thinking, what's the person next week going to say? You must stick it up over here. Well, I always love that. Some of us are free and we can stick our hands in the air. Jesus. Least we can do is raise our hands to the man. And God is saying, surprise me. Don't come and worship me the same every week and maybe clap in the first two songs. Use your whole bodies. Shout. If you get excited, about the rugby, shout about me. I'm much more worthy than the rugby players. Let's start shouting in this church. I'm not talking about fleshly shouts. I'm talking about God-inspired shouts. Dance.
Let God set every age group here free to dance before the Lord. He loves it. Like the children dance. How much do I love it when my little kid now is just learning music and does his little dance moves? I love it. I love it when he dances like that. So if the Father sitting in heaven, he sees we get excited about him and we start dancing. I mean, God gave us our bodies to enjoy him, you know? It's part of our praise. Dance, sing, clap, shout. It's all there. But let's surprise him. Let's not do the same thing week in, week out. Which brings me to my next point. Let's leave space for the demonstration of our affection in worship. That's my son William. He's 18 months now. And there are a lot of parents here. So we could have stuck any of your kids. We could have stuck Anton's kids, Joshua, all of them, up there. And God is saying, come as you are. And my son William, he's into cars right now. And a little bit into balls and quite a lot into music. But he's not really into affection or showing it to his parents. But we know that he loves us. We trust in us. But he's a really busy little guy. He's running around and, you know, he's just loving life and he's active and he's sunk, but the man's doing it, got it on the man's poppity ball and man's feeling with the TV remote and messes up our DSTV. But very seldom does he actually show affection from his side. So when it comes around, it's really special and you kind of treasure it for like 5 years. So we're lying on the bed the one morning and he kind of crawls up to me and I'm thinking, what are you doing, my boy? I'm like lying on the one side. And at that stage, he had a bit of a cold. He had the, you know, the Kloe Groen manier. Parents, you'll understand. You won't be crossed out on that. But, so it's in between our wiping of his nose. And he kind of crawls up to me. And I'm lying there, like, and he comes and he plants this kiss, like, kind of over my ear and in my beard. With the Kloe Groen manier. And I absolutely love it, you know. I absolutely love it because it came from him. And God is saying, come so near him, I'll just come. Let the affection come from your heart. Of course, Anton is saying, come on guys, let's praise him or let's say that we love him. It came straight from your heart. And God is saying, it's exactly the same with you, my children. Come as you are. Come as you are. I love you. I, as a mortal human being, get such a kick out of a snort near soon from Macon. How much more is the Father getting excited when we say, Father, I love you, I love you. I'm not ashamed to say, I love you. Yes, I'm a man. I can say, Father, I love you. God is saying it's exactly the same. And my last point, the heart of worship is a heart of thankfulness. And that's the key. That's the way God says to us, come into my presence with
thanksgiving.
There's a right way to come into God's presence, and it's with thanksgiving. I tell you, when you get thanksgiving right, it sorts out half the problems in your life. If you're struggling with being down or depressed or whatever, you just start in the morning. If I just feel slightly down or depressed, driving in the car to work, I'm like, hey, what the crap? If I'm feeling grumpy and I'm snapping at my wife or whatever, then I just start with thanksgiving and I say, thank you, Lord. Thank you that I slept in a warm bed last night. Thank you that I've got clothes on my back. Thank you that I don't have to go hungry. Thank you that I've got this amazing job. Thank you that I left now. Thank you for my amazing wife and child. Thank you for this amazing church. Thank you for my friends, Lord. Thank you for my family. Thank you for the parents you gave me. Yes, they're not perfect, but you gave them to me. I tell you, 5 minutes later, you thought you had depression. You don't have depression anymore. Now we start thinking about things like the eternal things that God's given us. And you start thinking, like Anton said, 1992, he gave his heart to the Lord. I tell you, when you think and you remember your salvation and the day you gave your heart to the Lord, then that's where praise starts erupting and the wells start coming up. The devil's main trick is he comes when you're not looking and he blocks that well so that your thanksgiving can't rise. And when he steals your thanksgiving, he steals your joy, and that's when things start going wrong in your life. So you've got to make sure and fight for those wells. Those wells must stay open and thanksgiving must come. So on Sundays, we're not coming and we're praising and worshiping when they play the first note of the first song. The praise has been happening all week. It's just the overflow of what's been happening corporately, what we have been experiencing this morning. It should be just what's happening in our quiet time today. That's praise, that's worship, and it all starts with thanksgiving. So, God is saying, people, come before me with thanksgiving.
So number one, to end off, and we're just going to respond in worship now as the band comes up. The heart of worship, it wants everything. It's like Anton was saying this morning. God is a jealous God, people, and He's not too worried about whether you perform for Him, or whether you give Him lots of money in your time, or whatever. But what He's after is our hearts. He wants entire hearts. When He's got our entire hearts, He's got our worship. He wants your heart to go beyond just me, myself, and I. He wants your heart to reach out to us. So we love the Lord our God with all our hearts, with all our minds, with all our souls. And number two, we love others. We love others. Our worship beats for justice, it beats for righteousness, it beats for us. Thirdly, let's surprise Him. Let's use our bodies. Let's not do the same old dish in the same old dishes that we give Him week in, week out. You're in a covenant relationship with Him. Let's surprise Him. And lastly, let's always enter His presence with thanksgiving. So won't you stand with us this morning? Worship. So just close your eyes. Let's just start thanking Him. Let's just start thinking. Let's even just think of our day of salvation. Just like Anton can recall the exact date in 1992, I can do exactly the same thing. I can think, Father, You redeemed my life from destruction. Like David, I can say, bless the Lord, O my soul, all that is within me, who forgives my iniquities, who heals my diseases, who satisfies my mouth with good things so that my youth is renewed like the eagles. Thank You that we can come with thankfulness this morning, Lord. Thank You that we can just think of all Your goodness. Like Psalm 23, we can look behind us and we can see goodness and mercy. Surely it's followed us all the days of our lives. And then, that's the place our praise starts. That's when we think, Lord, You have been good to us. You have been good to us, Lord. You brought rain here to start. Thank You for the rain, Father. Thank You for the rain, Father. Thank You for what You're already doing in Stanton, Lord. Thank You for every person that is here this morning, Lord. Thank You for what You are going to do through this church, Lord. Thank You for what You can do with a heart that's completely surrendered to You and that beats for others.